And what's up? Welcome in. Thursday episode, GC Live. Two in a row. How about that, Chris? Back-to-back GC Lives. It's, I don't know, it's been a while, I guess, since we've done that. There was a time when we were going all five for five, just knocking them out. But we don't obviously do that during the off season. But felt like it was a good week for it. Hopefully y'all have enjoyed our other shows that have been going on as well. Intern Joe, sort of headlining some of our other shows, along with Colin Taylor, Mike Uva, the Foul Ball show that just debuted. Of course, you've got Talking Tuesday, sometimes Talking Wednesdays with Mike Uva at night. But happy to hop back on here and see you all and do a back-to-back show and talk a little bit about what's been going on in the world of spring football practice. Also, Chris and I got a chance to catch up with Josh Van, former South Carolina wide receiver. Would encourage everyone to go check that out. Once we have that posted on the Gamecock Central YouTube page later on today. But, Chris, lots going on. What's up, man?
Yeah, man. I've got to see a little bit of practice. You saw more than I did, for sure. I have two highlights that I'm going to share later of practice. I know you have a lot more observations, but tracking some recruiting. You and I were just chatting about that before we jumped on the show here. Some visitors, of course. All spring for South Carolina this month of March. More on campus today. More will be on campus this weekend. And so continuing to track that as we get closer and closer to the spring game. And I anticipate that we'll have a full list, obviously, in the next couple weeks, next 3 weeks or so for the spring game. But anticipating a pretty good list of visitors for that as well. And then, of course, had a good talk with Josh earlier. And heard from Justin Stepp and Torian Gray today. So still a good bit of stuff to dive into here on this Thursday.
Yeah, before we do all that, want to thank our friend Clint Hammond for being our presenting sponsor here. ClintHammond.com, 803-771-6933. Clint is the local manager of the Movement Mortgage here in Columbia. Y'all have heard us tell you about Clint for, 2 or 3 years now. It used to be that Clint was with another company, but that's kind of been absorbed by Movement Mortgage. But I actually stopped by there the other day. It's the same great team, same great people. And essentially, if you are in the market for a house or just you want to see if you can even be in the market for a house, Clint will help walk you through that process and get you lined up as far as what you need to do to make that dream a reality. Again, 803-771-6933. Major shouts to Clint. Great dude and a great Gamecock. Like you said, Chris, you were hopping over to the Garnet Trust Hour, and the practice schedule just did not work that great for our schedule today, but that's okay. Beamer didn't do us any favors there, but he did provide a wonderful March Christmas present by giving the media who was there a little bit of true 11-on-11 action, as I told you. And, I've noticed, and it was kind of interesting, Josh, it was like Josh was having flashbacks. Josh Van was having flashbacks when I brought up the best of three offense versus defense, third down situational. I believe we were there one time last spring, and they had best of seven on goal line, I think. So I guess it's not always best of three. But the times we've seen it has been situational where it's, okay, it's third and four, it's third and seven. If the offense gets a first down, they win the rep. If the defense gets a stop, they win the rep. Simple. However, I think we've seen Beamer, not that this is unique to Carolina, but Beamer certainly wants to introduce competition into everything they do that even goes beyond just the on-the-field football competition part. So half filled or half gassers basically for the loser, and the offense to the victor goes the spoils, which today that was just avoiding having to run.
Yeah.
The offense goes 3 for 3 and beats up on the defense. The final one, the defense got to stop. There was a defensive PI or holding.
Ooh.
That gave the offense the first down. And, to be completely clear to everybody, it was ones versus ones for rep number one, twos versus twos for rep number two, and then back to ones versus ones for rep number three, though I noticed I think they actually put the third team defensive line in for that final rep. But Chris, you missed the 11 on 11. It happened so fast. I felt like it was on the new MLB pitch clock. It was like boom, 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 boom. Then they were back to doing special teams drills.
Yeah, just worked them in there. No, I'll tell you what, I did miss it. I hated to miss it, but I felt like I was there kind of because of your great report on GamecockCentral.com that everybody should go check out. You even gave somewhat of a non-depth chart, depth chart. I don't know, Wes, how they decided who was going to trot out there in the first team, second team, third team, since there still is no depth chart. They must have randomly selected them. But is this a good kind of segue into, did you see anything different in the depth chart today?
Yeah, I think it's a perfect segue for it. And, you know, first of all, let me just point out, Chris, Beamer was on the mic, right? And I got video evidence of this.
Oh.
He says on the mic, ones versus ones, line it up. So there may not be a depth chart, but there, at least for today, at least for that moment in time, there were some ones.
Yep.
And there were some twos. So we saw them against each other.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't call that a depth chart, but it happened. Couple of interesting notes in terms of that. And I'll say this, by the way, Craig's saying that Chris is much louder than me.
I turned my mic. I don't know. Craig, give me a little feedback and let me know if that means that I'm just too loud.
Yeah. Or what is it? Chris too is quiet. Too loud or Wes is too quiet?
Too quiet. There you go. I did turn my mic down a little bit so we can match up a little bit better. If I'm too loud, let me know.
So, yeah, let us know, Craig. We'll adjust on the fly. It was interesting. Craig brings up Marky Anderson working second team guard. That was the case. He was second team guard. Nick Gargiulo was actually first team left guard today. I think that caught both me and Chris off guard. No pun intended. Just a little bit. Because I think we both were kind of thinking along the lines, if somebody were to swing out to guard to get the two of them on the field, it would probably be Vershawn Lee, who has played every position on the line at some point in his career. Yeah. So yeah, Gargiulo sliding out to left guard. I will say this, completely just glancing at him. Again, these were two plays with the ones. But he didn't look out of place physically as a guard. You know how some centers are just a little bit tinier than everybody else, and that's why they're a center. Gargiulo doesn't look out of place. So worth noting. But I still think, man, there's going to be quite a bit of shuffling on that. The other point I will make, though, is that Jakai Moore did not participate in the ones or the twos. So he was there. He was dressed out. He was at practice. He was actually watching intently. Like, he was up closer than everybody else during those reps. So we're never privy to the reasons for something like that on a day-to-day, like, moment in time practice rep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did he get dinged up the drill before and they said, catch your breath? You know what I mean? We don't know. But point being, if we're going to read into the depth chart on something like this, I don't think that means Marky Anderson is the second team left guard yet, because you're talking about your presumptive starter at left guard not being involved in either drill. Now, Chris, it does maybe give us some insight. This was my takeaway, because you and I talk about this quite often. Best 11, or in terms of position grouping, best five,
mm-hmm.
best six, who's your next guy up? Maybe that tells us if a guard were to go down, the next move is actually, at this point, very early, is that maybe they're considering Gargiulo is now in at guard with Lee still as your center. Or if the other guy won the center spot, maybe it kind of reverses. But that maybe those two guys make up your top six is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Does that pass the smell test to you?
That's exactly what I was thinking, actually, because, you know, a lot of times with the offensive line, it's a little bit different, right? You know, you kind of think, like D-line, for instance. There are a lot of differences between center, guard, tackle. Like, those three kind of positions are all certainly different. But there's an even bigger difference between, say, defensive tackle and end. So when you're talking about, hey, what's your best four guys on the D-line versus your best five guys on the O-line, you know, you're going to think more in terms of who is my backup tackle on defense. Offensively, if you've got some guys with versatility, which South Carolina does, let's say Ja'Kai Moore is your starting left guard. If he goes down, it's not necessarily, okay, here's Markey Anderson, or here's whoever's on the depth chart. It is, who can we slide over that can play guard well and is going to be our next best option? So, you know, you mentioned Vershawn Lee. He can get reps and play every single position, really, on the entire offensive line from left to right and everything in between. Ja'Kai Moore has played tackle and guard. You know, Jalen Nichols, tackle and guard at points in his career. Nick Gargiulo played left tackle, actually, in the Ivy League earlier in his career before he moved over and played center, and now he's getting reps at guard. So South Carolina has several guys that are versatile enough to play multiple spots, and even though there's obviously differences in center, guard, tackle, they still have some guys that can do all those things. So that's exactly where I went with it. When you gave the context of Ja'Kai sitting out, especially, that signaled to me, hey, Nick Gargiulo and Vershawn Lee, which we knew he would be, they're in that top five to, what would it be, seven probably, five to eight guys that you want to have going into it every single year.
Yeah, Big Red with a couple of good questions here, Chris. And again, I want to make a point when we are on the GC Live version of this to take as many questions as we can to differentiate it from the radio side where maybe we don't get to see your questions. And so hit us in the chat line with that. But Big Red saying, could ones and twos change before the first game? I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, I was trying to point out, too, in my observations from practice on the defense, Chris, that, dude, look at the guys who are out right now injured on the defensive side. You actually have starter-level players. Not to say that they're all going to just step right in, but most of them probably will, actually. You have starter-level players at every level of the defense coming back. I mean, you've got, obviously, Jordan Strong, Tonka Hemingway, Mo Kaba, David Spaulding. So you're talking about an edge, an interior defensive lineman, a linebacker, and a safety/nickel who is going to be reintroduced into the mix. So when we're looking at these depth charts right now, or these fake depth charts, if you will, we also, like, let's be fair, we got to acknowledge and put it in context as well. So I know everybody earns a position. Those guys will have to come back and earn their spot. But Tonka Hemingway is starting somewhere.
No doubt.
He's on the one. He's in the ones. Like, he's in that group. Jordan Strong, probably starting at edge. Mo Kaba, if he's back to being himself, I think pretty safe bet there as well, based on what we saw last year. And then David Spaulding is in the mix, certainly.
Yeah.
Like,
He's playing.
Yeah. He's in the rotation.
Yeah.
So, in context, if we list two guys, all those two edge guys are with the starters right now. Really, it's one of those two guys, I feel like. All those two defensive tackles, it's one of those two. So, you know, I think it's a great thing for those guys getting reps right now, and it still tells us something. But I think when we look at the big picture context of it, it's a little bit – it's not quite as simple as just saying, oh, those are the projected starters for South Carolina. That's really not the case.
Yeah. And I think even like to go back to the offensive line, I promise I won't talk about center and guard all day long, Wes. You know, those, that's a spot or a position, positions where might do some tinkering. You know, we've already seen that, you know, with putting Garjulo at left guard, having him also play some center. Whenever Ja'Kai Moore is back in the mix, you know, they're able to cross train a little bit. They're able to tinker with the lineups. So yeah, there may be some adjusting in terms of like, do we know for sure who the starting offensive line is right now in the spring? No, we don't. And then for that position, more than the ones and twos, it's about having your top 5 to 8 guys, right, that you roll in and out of there. You've got the injured guys that are coming back. You've got some other spots where you say, hey, can a younger receiver who hasn't played as much, can they get into that top 6 slots? Especially, Wes, if you consider DeCarrion Joyner, if he's spending more time at running back, that in theory opens up a little bit more, maybe some more snaps at the wide receiver position. So, that, you know, not to mention who's definitely going to be the kick returner, who's definitely going to be the punt returner, and who are their backups. There are still a lot of questions, I think, to be answered. This was what, practice number 5 or so. So, yeah, I mean, you've got spring ball, then you've got the summer. There's going to be some more players added to this roster in the summer from the 2023 recruiting class, plus the transfer portal. So, you know, May 1st through 15th is another transfer portal window opening. And we know that South Carolina, at a bare minimum, and maybe, well, maybe likely more than this, running back and edge. Time will tell if those additions are going to be a depth add or a starter level player. We have no way to know that yet. So yeah, there's all sorts of reasons to believe that there could be some room for shifts. Now there's some spots that are locked down. I mean, firmly locked down, but there are others where there's some room for it to, you know, be changed up a little bit, especially if you consider how long you've got until the actual season.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I think try to pride ourselves on framing things up, you know, as best we can, to where you're not just seeing headlines, you're not just seeing depth, like you're actually getting some context on where things are. And Chris, I think the more I hear, the more I think, yes, certainly they're going to hit edge, they're going to hit running back. I think there is a possibility we see them hit the portal maybe more aggressively than even I was maybe anticipating. Like I've heard a couple of little things that are just leading me to believe that in the last couple of weeks. Now, again, this mostly will have to do with who is out there. But have you noticed how every time Beamer talks about the portal, he also adds in, like, you know, we're going to keep looking, like we're not going to turn down a great player. And, you know, they offered a kid the other day from Houston who is an offensive lineman and great player, all conference, started a couple of years there. Haven't really heard anything else about if there's any, you know, mutual interest there. But just the sheer fact that they reached out and offered tells you something. And, you know, if man, in this league, if a good player, certainly if a great player, but I'll even say if a good player, if a really good player is interested in your program, you almost have to consider taking them because you don't know what spot is going to get hit hard by an injury. And you don't know what spot, maybe you look back and just wish you had added one more player. I mean, we use the example all the time, Nate Atkins. Chris, was not one of the ones saying, oh, that's a stupid take. Like, you know, you're just taking him because of who his dad is. I know it's like a fan take. But, I mean, frankly, I was sitting there going, you know, I might would have gone out and tried to get a safety. Like, I thought maybe some other positions were bigger needs. Well, guess what? We don't always know. We don't always have all the answers. Some guy named Nick Emanwori and DQ Smith made the safety deal not even an issue. And Nate Atkins ended up being one of the best players on the entire offense. So, you know, you never know who you're going to add that's going to play a bigger role than we think on paper. So I wouldn't be like, I think we know they're going to hit running back. We know they're going to hit edge, and they're going to hope they hit their needs there. Maybe they take two edges, honestly, if the right two are there. I wouldn't be opposed to that if I was running the roster. But there might be a random guy or two, a random position, Chris, where they could still get better without it even being a huge, quote, need on paper.
Yeah, there are probably realistically, I would say, three positions where you're probably not going to take a guy, and that's quarterback. Because built into that fact, Wes, if you're getting a quarterback out of the portal, usually it's a guy who's looking to go somewhere and play. That's your more typical, and that's when you would be more apt to take a quarterback at this juncture. So you're not looking there, and you're probably not looking kicker or punter unless it's like a freshman who you feel like you can kind of have weight in the wings. Other than that, it's kind of open season. There aren't many rosters in college football, and I'm talking even elite teams. I'm talking Georgia. If there was some elite player that entered the portal, called up Georgia, wanted to jump in, even those guys are probably going, all right, should we take this guy? Probably we should take this guy, right? You just look at all the positions on South Carolina's roster. There are some that you feel better about than others, certainly, but there aren't really any except for the ones that I mentioned where you're like, they don't need any help at all. They're good. Everything's completely good. They can go out and you feel good about them going 12-0 with this roster, right? Because that's what you're trying to do when you're adding through recruiting, where they're adding to the transfer portal. So, yeah, I mean, and you look back, you mentioned the offensive lineman that they offered, Wes. They offered the last portal window, they offered a DB. So that kind of shows you, hey, if the right DB comes along, they might look that route. They had some offers out at linebacker, so you certainly could anticipate they look there. I wouldn't even rule out, I mean, heck, if you found a really good defensive tackle. I mean, you lose Zach Pickens, you've got some other guys that are younger on the roster and a mix of some older guys, but there's really no position except for just a few, quarterback and the specialist, where you're just saying South Carolina just needs to and probably will stand pat. I think they'll monitor this thing pretty heavily.
Yeah, and we'll certainly be monitoring that right along with them. I'm trying to think if there was anything else that I noted in there that was worth looking at. While I think about that, had another couple questions here I want to hit on. Kalik Horton, let's see, where'd you go? Quantrell Knows, question about Kalik. Chris, I don't know if you've put your eyes on Kalik out there, but I mean, physically, every time he wears number 20, he's 20 Garnett. Every time I see 20 Garnett, it's kind of like the Xavier Leggett effect.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, God, this kid looks fantastic physically. And I've made the comment several times that I think Kalik, if it works out, because there is an inherent risk in taking a guy from eight-man football. Because it's just a tough transition. It's nothing to do with Kalik. It's a tough transition. You're going to be raw. You're going to be a raw football player compared to a lot of your colleagues if you're coming from eight-man ball. I've made the comment that I think Kalik, though, could be one of those people. You don't really hear much about him year one, don't really hear much about him year two, and then all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, you just get a little like tidbit about, hey, Kalik's looked good in, you know, first couple of practices. Kalik's had a great summer. And then all of a sudden, he just comes out of nowhere and really helps his football team and helps his football program and helps his own stock. I could see it being not in the on-field career path, but just in how it works out. I could see it being similar to like a Darius Rush. You know, you're coming in from a small school, kind of finding your way early on, trying, you know. Now I think Kalik physically is actually appears SEC ready from a body type standpoint. And I think he'll probably stick at wide receiver, but I'll tell y'all this, there was some talk even very early on, his future could be at safety. His future could be at linebacker, man. Like he looks that good physically. So I would say my answer on Kalik Horton is I haven't heard that sort of buzz, Chris, that you and I would typically hear for a guy who's about to break out. But I'm not giving up on this kid by any means, because he clearly has the DNA and he clearly has worked in the weight room.
Yeah, and that's exactly why you kind of wait on him. There are some guys, whether it's at South Carolina or just other schools and kind of following recruiting and rosters, where you go, you know, I'm not sure if that guy will ever hit because athletically he might not quite be there. With Kyle Leak, that's not as much of a question. You know, we remember even seeing him in camp. I mean, as a recruit, he obviously had a ways to go in terms of just getting bigger and stronger, and he was raw, but just the testing numbers were there. And it does remind me, and I do not want to give the impression that now in 3 years he's going to be a top 100 pick, but it does remind me of Darius Rush a little bit, right? You saw Darius Rush in camp. He wasn't a finished product. He had a lot of ways to go, and you weren't sure positionally where he would definitely end up. There were some options there, but what did he have? Well, he had kind of the canvas. He had the testing numbers and the athleticism. Wes, we weren't tracking Darius Rush in 2019 as a future star, basically, for South Carolina, like a third pretty high NFL draft pick. I liked his potential, but I wouldn't have predicted that at that point. Now, in 2020, which would have been year three for Darius, he started playing on some special teams more during the COVID year, and he got, you know, he got more acclimated defensively. And then 21 was even better, and then 22 was his best. And so sometimes for some of these guys who come out, if they come out of high school and they're kind of raw, it takes a little bit of time. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. We haven't heard a lot about this being a potential breakout for Kylie Corton, but he's always been a guy that I think we kind of keep in the back of our minds because he does have those athletic traits that are so, so intriguing.
Yeah, and I don't care how sharp you are on the field. I don't care. You know, there's a question on here. Is position of players solely based on physicality, or does cerebral count as well? Cerebral certainly counts, but you have to have the physical traits to match up. And that's why NFL teams get so caught up in the NFL combine and the pro days. And, you know, we like to make fun of that stuff, and rightfully so. You're going to miss in recruiting. You're going to miss in evaluations with NFL players as well. But sorry, if a guy runs a 5.0 40, then he's not going to get past somebody who runs a 4.5 40. So that's why all that is there. And you look at Kylie and you say, he has those traits. Now, for Big Red's question, which was completely separate from Kylie, but just to kind of combine the two, does being cerebral count? Absolutely. Once you check all the boxes, once you check the markers on being athletic enough or physical enough or having the size, having the strength, then to me, that's where the instincts, the football IQ, the knowledge of the system, the experience in the system, that's where all those things sort of click in. And you can make up for a little bit of a lack of speed. You can make up for a little bit of lack of size. Maybe you're just one of these guys that is like sneaky good and you just have a way of getting off blocks or something like that. But that's only up to a certain point, I think. So the best have all the above. And frankly, the best are these guys that are really, really good football players. You listen to them talk. They're very intelligent people and understand the nuances of being successful in whatever it is they're trying to do.
Let me go back to a not an old example, still somewhat recently, but you know, Wes, I had a couple really long conversations with Ellis Johnson recently, former Gamecocks DC, and he had some of the best stuff he had to say was about Eric Norwood. Did you remember Eric as a recruit? I mean, he was a 3-star recruit, and his measurables out of high school were frankly not that great. I mean, he was 6'6", 6'1". I don't remember what he weighed out of high school, but just I remember seeing his high school 40 time. Wasn't that great. Just athletically, he maybe didn't jump off the page at you, but he was a really, really good football player and really good pass rusher at South Carolina. And so I asked Ellis, you know, how did he do that? What was it about Eric? And Ellis went through all the things. He's like, was it his size? No. Was it his speed? No. But he talked about how smart he was. He said that they would run a lot of different fronts and make teams prepare for five or six different types of fronts. And the only player doing anything different was Eric Norwood. They could just line him up in all sorts of different spots. He was also a really crafty pass rusher. He may not have run 4-5. I mean, you got some of these freak edge defensive ends that can run 4-4, 4-5, especially nowadays. Eric couldn't do that. But what he could do is when he pass rushed, he could run full speed immediately, and he could run around and dip around a guy at the same speed that he could if he was just lining up, running a 40-yard dash. And he was also just really smart. He could read offensive tackles, just kind of had a knack for it. And, you know, I think when you find players that have the right amount of physical ability and those smarts, they can be, you know, really, really effective. And there's a lot of examples of those types of players in football. I mean, Jerry Rice, there was a clip circulating on Twitter recently, Wes, of Jerry Rice in practice. And he was what, a 4.7 guy, but he just killed people because he was just such a good route runner. And you see that all the time in the NFL now. I think good example current USC's roster is Nick Gargiulo. It's a guy that's he was a finance major at Yale. You know, obviously very academically smart. He's picked things up quickly here, but he's also a really tough football player. He's big. He's put on weight since he's gotten at South Carolina. And so, you know, you can be really effective if you have some physical tools and a lot of smarts and football IQ.
Yeah, and ultimately it's a combination. And how do you put all that together? And, you know, some things we maybe don't, like Jerry Rice, for example. Dude wasn't running a great 40-yard dash, but that is certainly also a physical skill. That is a trait and a developed skill to have the balance and the dexterity and just the it's almost an ability of taking what you're thinking mentally and being able to apply it to what your body is doing physically, body control in and out of breaks. So you may look at him and say, oh, he's slow, so he's not a great athlete. No, he was a fantastic athlete. It's just a different type of athleticism, I think, when it comes to a guy like that. And the thing, Chris, that made Norwood special, how many times, and shows you what his impact was too, how many times after Norwood left would Carolina be in on an undersized, smaller, edge-type guy, and it's, oh, well, maybe he could be the next Norwood.
Yeah.
that's how you know you made an impact. But also that note that shows you're a little bit rare because
– yeah.
I can't think of anybody who got that treatment and actually was the next Norwood, you know?
No, it's tough to be the next Norwood. I mean, it's super productive. I mean, you're talking about, I think he's first team all SEC type guy. It's tough to do. He made so many plays at South Carolina, and that was just because he was able to completely maximize his potential. It does get you thinking. It's like, you know, Wes, if Eric Norwood was like 6'5", 250, and just had elite measurables, I mean, he would have been like one of the best football players like of all time in the SEC. And I'm not kidding. I mean, really, just his smarts and the way he used his hands, his production, he just had it. You know, he just knew how to play the game, and he really maximized like his physical ability that he had. I'm not saying he did not have physical ability, because clearly he did, just comparatively to some other guys. He wasn't elite of elite in terms of the athletic traits.
What's the most interesting thing Ellis Johnson has said to you?
Printable?
Oh, no, actually not.
Yeah. No, we will go with printable or readable things. Man, they're just, golly, there are so many. And by the way, we're up to, I think we're up to six parts, Wes, on the Ellis Johnson files on GamecockCentral.com.
So that probably covered one-tenth of what y'all talked
about. There's so much. Yeah, there's so much there to say. I mean, there's some funny recruiting stories for sure. Honestly, the Norwood stuff was among the most interesting. Here's one. This one was crazy. So we were talking about Steve Spurrier. And Ellis said, hey, I've worked for a lot of different types of coaches. You know, some that are a little bit more organized or a lot organized. Some that are, you know, a little bit more loose with things. As we know, Wes, Spurrier very loose with things in terms of how he ran it. So first spring practice, you know, Ellis goes to Spurrier's office because he's trying to get things organized and be able to get their installation schedule for the spring. They're putting in a new system, new defensive coordinator, first time all practicing together. So he wants everybody to be on the same page. And he goes to Spurrier and says, hey, coach, do you have the install schedule for third downs? And Spurrier says, well, what do you mean? He said, you know, and he tries to explain it further. And Spurrier says, no, you know, and Ellis goes, well, I want to get the guys on the same page. And Spurrier just goes, well, we'll do it. If we get to it, we'll do it. You know, just kind of, just brushes it off. But Ellis ended up finding, kind of getting an idea of when they were going to do it because he had some of the grad assistants go back and pull their practice schedules from the previous years. And he went back and looked through all those different schedules and every single day was exactly the same, but Spurrier never wrote it down. It was just all in his head, you know? So he just, that's how he was. And so Ellis would talk about, you know, calling plays against Spurrier and how difficult it was because he said it really only took him, you know, some offensive coordinators or play callers, they need to go into halftime and talk to everybody that's been on the headsets. They got to get the data from the press box, all that kind of stuff. Spurrier saw what you were doing and he could adjust in 2 seconds, you know, with the next thing that he was doing. So Ellis said at that point with that practice script thing, he realized kind of why Spurrier was so smart. So that to me was a really, really a pretty neat kind of illustration of the genius that was Steve Spurrier.
Did you ask Ellis about going against Spurrier when Ellis was at Auburn?
Yes. Yes. Surprising answer, actually.
Have you written that one yet?
No, I haven't written that part yet. I'll give a little spoiler. By the way, part one for anybody listening, part one of Ellis Johnson, which is actually one of the most interesting ones. Because that could have been my answer to your first question, Wes. It actually talks about how Dabo talked about hiring him. That's free on GamecockCentral.com if you're not a member. So you can check that out. The Auburn game, what year was that, Wes? 2014. Carolina goes to Auburn. Ellis Johnson is calling the defense for Gus Malzahn. And, you know, both those teams went up and down the field on each other. And, but actually, Wes, Ellis said that was easier in terms of the play calling and prep. He just said that because he had not only gone against Spurrier a bunch of times in his career, but he had practiced with him and, you know, gone against him so many times in practice. He had a better feel for the system. He just said they weren't very good on defense. I mean, he said Auburn that year had two guys that would have maybe started for Carolina. Like when he was there, when they were really good on defense, they had some dudes on his defenses, you know? So that was pretty fascinating. I think he didn't think the actual play calling was as difficult or more difficult than usual. It's just that they kind of stunk. And Carolina, obviously, that year was not very good on defense either.
Yeah. And they were good on offense that year, but they also
yes.
went up and down. I felt like that was the most dialed in I had seen Spurrier in a long time. Maybe that's just the vibe. Maybe we're like romanticizing it, but
no, you're not.
I remember thinking Spurrier knows exactly who is in that other press box. And not even like that there's a dislike. It was more just like, oh yeah, this is my former defensive coordinator. Of course I gotta try to show him up. Like that's Spurrier the competitor.
Yeah.
That's just how he is. But before we move further, we'll get in a few more things. Hey, did you get to listen to Step or Gray at all yet, Chris?
I didn't get to listen. I followed along doing a lot of reading at Gamecock Central today, Wes. Checked out our notes.
Got some notations. All right, that's good. Yep. We'll hit people with a few of those. But first, going to tell you all about our friends at Liberty Tax. You can overcome your taxiety, 803-462-5576. They've got Liberty Tax locations in Columbia, Irmo, and Lexington. Again, 803-462-5576. Tax time is here. And no matter how you want to do your taxes, no matter what process you're most comfortable with, our friends at Liberty Tax have options for you. You can just show up. You can start them online. You can upload your documents online. You can call them and set up an appointment. Whatever you want to do, they've got those options for you. 803-462-5576. Help overcome your taxiety and take a little bit off your plate and let our friends here at Liberty Tax handle your tax burdens, I will say, because let's be honest, nobody enjoys doing their taxes. But looking at a calendar, Chris, I believe the 18th is the deadline this year. You are less than a month away. So everybody, go do your taxes now so that you don't have to call Liberty Tax and ask them to help you with the IRS, which would not be fun. So, Chris, Step talking today, Tori and Gray talking today. I have not gone back and listened yet. I plan to do that later on this afternoon. But as you said, there are some notations on Gamecock Central. What you got there?
One thing that stood out to me about what Step said, let's start with him. Just talked a little bit about Dowell Loggins' offense and kind of echoed or mirrored some of the things that we've heard. Haven't had a chance to observe a lot of it, Wes, because we just haven't seen a lot of the offense in action this spring. We'll, you know, probably get to see more as spring goes on. Certainly the spring game will give us our best glimpse of all that. But just talked about some of the things that they're doing, and that's, you know, getting receivers out in space to make plays, vertically attacking, deep balls. Now, look, there has not been an offensive coordinator ever or a coach ever who has not said some version of get the ball to our playmakers, attack the field horizontally and vertically, et cetera, right? But you get the sense from what we've heard from practice behind the scenes, and then just taking what Dowell Loggins has said, what Step said, what some of the offensive players have said, that they are making a little bit of a concerted effort in it, right? We've heard of some tangible changes and just kind of how they're administering the offense and how they're getting the ball to some of their playmakers, especially the receivers.
Yeah, and I think that's something Gamecock fans, you know, Chris, will say in some ways it is music to their ears. In some ways, let's be honest, man, I think we're at the point where they're just like, I want to see it. Like,
show me. Show me. That's fair.
You know, now we saw what these receivers are capable of down the stretch last year. And, you know, you and I have talked. Xavier Leggett sure feels like he's about to kind of take another big step forward. One thing Justin Stepp talked about was how proud he was of the way Leggett finished the season last year. The fact that kickoff return for touchdown against A&M sort of gave him a big confidence boost. It sure felt that way because it kind of felt like people gave up on him a little bit with the two drops that led to turnovers. And, you know, he needed something good to happen. And then that happened against A&M, the big Gator Bowl where he looked outstanding. And right now he is holding down whatever that depth chart is. He is holding down a spot with the ones. And I think they feel pretty good about their wide receivers going into the season. And Step probably feels pretty good about that group. Now it's just a matter of getting them in a position to make plays and getting them comfortable within this offense. And I do think the tight ends being who they are, I think they're going to be a big part of this offense, Chris, but I think that will help take pressure off the receivers. And, you know, something we got right into the big uglies. We didn't really talk much about other spots earlier. So let's go full circle here. Josh Simon working with the ones at tight end. Yeah. Now, certainly Trey Knox is going to be, I think, a starter, certainly a top rotational guy. I think we're going to see some two tights, both those guys on the field at one time. But Josh Simon, really, from what I've heard, is maybe, I don't want to say he's the surprise of the spring yet, but he's been one of the early top performers in terms of newcomers from what I have heard.
I think he's flown under the radar a little bit. You know, there could be a lot of reasons for that, Wes. I think he came from Western Kentucky, although by now, you know, I mean, Juice Wells came from James Madison. He's certainly a great player. Wasn't a highly rated guy out of high school. He's a tight end, so it's not like a running back or a receiver. So maybe it doesn't, or a quarterback. You know, maybe not as sexy of a position. But, I mean, if you look back at what Josh has done in his college career, he's played a lot of football, and he's been quite productive. And he can do a lot of things. If you go back and watch, you know, how he was used at Western Kentucky, you know, he can play in line. They played him kind of as a H-back type at times. He can run. He's got size. He's got, obviously, ball skills because he's caught a lot of balls in his career. So it has been interesting that he's made, you know, that much of an impact, maybe to where, I mean, even getting some reps with the ones, as you said, but always anticipated he would play a good bit this season. But he has flown under the radar a little bit, and I think maybe didn't get quite enough credit or enough, maybe didn't have enough expectations put on him, you know, when he arrived at South Carolina as a transfer.
Yeah, and I think, not that it's the same skill set as Nate Atkins, but I do think there's potentially a similar impact in him being just someone that, maybe if you're like big hardcore fan, follows Gamecock Central, follows everything going on, I think by the time the season rolls around, you're gonna know this guy's name. If you're a casual fan, doesn't really follow it, and just is going to kind of go into game one blind, you might be saying, wait, who is number six? Where'd this guy come from? And eventually, I think he'll be maybe a household name within the South Carolina fan base by the end of the season. All right, real quick, Chris, let's talk about Torian Gray a little bit. Anything noteworthy from who may be the best defensive back developer in the country?
In the world, I think Beamer said.
The universe.
In the universe. Yeah, so he did say something that we kind of hit on the other day, so I'm glad he said it. So he was talking about Nick Emenwori. And let me pull up kind of – this will still be a paraphrase, but he was talking about Nick Emenwori and said there's no perfect freshman season, and he felt like Nick tailed off at the end a little bit. And so it's – finishing tackling and doing the little things. And we talked about this, Wes, a little bit, how, you know, Nick Emenwori and DQ Smith, what they did last season, it was pretty incredible still, because they were true freshmen. They were summer enrollees. You know, DQ is a guy that came in and played and, you know, had not played DB since eighth grade. You know, Nick Emenwori playing at this level for the first time. What they did was pretty incredible. But I think we've gotten a little bit maybe forgotten that they are freshmen and they didn't play perfectly. And they still have a lot of room to grow and get better. They haven't, you know, arrived yet. Something Shane Beamer likes to say, that as a team, they haven't arrived yet. That's the case with Nick Emenwori. Now, that should be an exciting thing because he can get a lot better. But, you know, you go back and, yeah, he cleaned up a ton for them last year. But there were some plays that you go look at and you say, okay, you know, Nick had a few freshman moments here and there, whether it was in pass coverage or even in the run game where he did really well in both those areas. But there's a lot that can be cleaned up and a lot that can be better. So that's not a bad thing. It's actually quite a good thing for South Carolina that he can continue taking his game to the next level. And from what we know about Torian Gray, Wes, and he hit on this a little bit today as well, he's going to push those guys and you know, get him developed and try to squeeze as much as he can out of him.
So I want to try to give people a little bit of insight here, Chris, because, again, stuff's just not as open as it once was. We all know that. But Torian Gray, go watch that press conference. And I haven't even watched this one, but I've watched several other ones, obviously. If you were to meet Torian Gray, if you were just bump into him, he's a pretty just laid back, not even a super loud, just kind of calm, kind of chill, honestly. But you put him in between the lines, I mean, he pushes these dudes. Like, he really, I think, walks the line perfectly as a modern-day coach in that he's going to love up on them. He's going to be chill off the field. But he is going to ask a lot of his guys. And I was a little bit just, I don't know, I guess surprised the first time I saw Torian Gray operating up close on the field. Like, he's loud. Like, he's aggressive. Like, he gets after it. But the results, you know, speak for themselves. And not to always go back to like, Darius Rush, but, I mean, that's just the latest example of somebody that he's helped develop. And I feel like if you ask Darius, to what I've heard, if you ask Darius, you know, he would say he's very, very thankful that that ended up being who Shane Beamer brought in to be, you know, his defensive backs coach. And the results have kind of spoken for themselves. You obviously know you're replacing a couple of really good players in Darius Rush and Cam Smith at cornerback as we sort of focus over to that spot. But, I mean, they kind of have their next two guys in line, and it's going to be up to Marcellus and it's going to be up to OD to kind of live up to that. Or you kind of feel like they'll, frankly, shuffle in the next guy.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be scared to do that at all. You know, and those two guys with Rush and Cam, I mean, when you're talking about a later first, early second rounder, and then a top 100 guy, it's really tough, you know, to replace those guys. Even if you had guys that were, you know, if you brought in, hey, this is a guy with first round and top 100 talent, like, they would still have to show it, right? And we know that Dial and Fortune have talent. We know that, fortunately for South Carolina, they have experience. They've shown some of what they can do in spots, but there's still a lot to prove. And same thing for Nicky Minwori, DQ Smith, you know, David Spalding, Keenan Nelson, Emery Floyd. I mean, a lot of the guys that are going to play key roles this year. Again, it should be exciting that these guys still have steps that they can take as players, whether it's some guys that are going to be in their last year, like a Dial, or if it's guys that have multiple years left that, you know, really got a taste, more than a taste, for Eamon Warrior and Smith of things, but they've got a progression that they can continue following. So there's still some questions there at DB, but I think certainly you feel good that you have some personnel at your disposal there and some guys that have played, and then you have Torian Gray coaching and developing them.
I think the next step for Nick is on not even necessarily coverage. Like, I feel like he can actually, not that he's asked to do it a ton, but he can kind of lock guys down, even as big as he is, in man coverage. I think it's just sort of that finding the proper depth on deep balls where you are the free safety and you're the guy that's patrolling the middle. And then you're trying to figure out, all right, is this deep ball going to my right? Is this deep ball going to my left? Where do I need to situate myself on the field in order to be able to get there versus not getting there and making split-second decisions at the SEC level? Not easy at all. And so I think that's just the next step for him as far as his progression. Something that I think will come along will be just him in the passing game, in coverage, but when he's asked to, like, drop back and play that deep zone, you know, as opposed to, like, hey, you're supposed to cover this guy, just use your immense physical talent. Because even he's another one. I mean, I hate to be a broken record, Chris, but he's another one. I watched Nick today, and even just seeing him for a full year, when you see him in person again, you're just like, man, this is like a tall, long, just well put together football player. Like, he looks like an NFL guy, and he's really looked like that, honestly, frankly, from the moment he stepped on campus, which is impressive and also all the more just dumbfounding that he wasn't more highly recruited.
It really is. I mean, when, you know, you see some of the, you see his physical presentation of just what he looks like. And then you look at, you know, what he can, how he can run and the testing numbers that are without question. And then you say, okay, well, maybe he didn't produce in high school. Well, he produced in high school at a lot of different spots. It does make it dumbfounding. There's no doubt about it. Kind of bizarre, but good for South Carolina. For sure.
Hey, great for the Gamecocks. Just like you were talking about earlier with Norwood, if Norwood was 6'5" and as good as he was, he probably was never playing for the Gamecocks. So I think with Nick You're glad that he was in Irmo. You're glad that you hopped on him first. You're glad. I mean, you got pretty easy free win there almost. So take advantage of that and develop this guy and put him in a position because he will play in the league one day. All right, y'all, we're pretty much out of time, but appreciate y'all as always. Glad y'all joined us. Glad we were able to hit back-to-back days. I can tell y'all we will not be on tomorrow. I do know that if you're into baseball, this big SEC series this weekend, South Carolina, Missouri, from what I heard, I think Colin and Kendall are putting together a baseball preview video. So if you're into the video podcast side of things, then be sure to check that out, especially if you like baseball. But until then, Chris and I will have our regular radio show tomorrow, and then we'll be back. We'll probably try to hop on and hit a GC Live on Monday, and maybe we'll have some more team notes for y'all then. But until then, y'all have a great weekend. For Chris, I'm Wes. We'll see y'all then.